instalment of Money May 2013. Every Tuesday in May, we get some top tips on how to manage your cash from our resident money man, Dave Penny, from Invest Southwest. Morning, Dave.
Morning, Emma.
I understand you enjoyed our dandelion chat earlier.
I thought it was topical, it was informative.
You've changed your mind about dandelions, haven't you?
I have. I'm not going to.
You're going to leave them?
From now on, it's for the bees.
So when Mrs. Penny says, Dave, mow the lawn, you go, no, I'm leaving them for the bees.
Yeah, and they'll grow back shorter.
That's bizarre, isn't it? Bizarre. Now, last week, we talked about pensions, didn't we? And we're going to cover, in the next couple of weeks, savings and investments and insurance as well. But today, we're going to talk property. Now, Dave's here until 11:30. So if you have a question, don't leave it till 11:30, because he's got to get back to his office and do lots of important financial-related things. So get your questions in now, 81333 to text me. Start your message with the word Somerset. Mortgages. I think if people haven't applied for one or tried to refix one for a while, they won't understand how the market's changed. Are the lenders still lending? Because they got a little bit tight, didn't they?
Well, yes, there's good news and there's bad news in the mortgage market right now. The good news is there are some incredible rates that no one's ever really seen previously in the marketplace. There's a 10-year fixed rate at the moment, 10 years fixed at 3.99%, which is, 10, 15 years ago, I fixed at 5% for 5 years and couldn't believe it could go lower.
I've just fixed for 5 years at 3.89,
well, I think. Good.
So, yeah.
For 5 years, there's a 2.99 out there.
Yeah.
And there's a 2-year fixed rate at 1.74%. So
wow.
There's great news out there in the mortgage market. The flip side to that coin is that the mortgage lenders are very, very choosy. They do need to try and rebuild their balance sheets, and that in English that means they need to try and not lend money, because the regulators are making them build up their savings to not have another disaster like previously. So they're quite keen not to lend, one could argue, and they're therefore very picky about having a big deposit, having a very good fixed permanent salary, about having a good credit rating, that kind of thing. So we see lots of mortgage applications that get kicked out during the process. But if you're a quality borrower,
yeah,
then there are fabulous rates out there.
I've never really understood that, because the way I look at it is, you don't want to lend irresponsibly to people who can't afford it, but if you lend to someone, if they don't keep up the payments, you've got their house, the mortgage lender have got the house anyway. So it's win-win for them, isn't it?
It is, and indeed that's what's happened with the lending bubble that occurred in the noughties up to 2008, is the lender said, well, if the worst comes to the worst, we'll take the house back off you, we'll sell it, we'll get our money back.
Yeah.
But what's happened is that there are a lot of people in distress, in human terms, in the property crash, when property has fallen by 20, 30%, people can't afford their mortgages. There are families, there are people, human beings, who are really suffering and being, you know, moved away from their homes, chucked out, made bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Good people who, in all good faith, felt that the mortgage market, the housing market, would keep going up. So the regulators have now said to the lenders, you must think of it in human terms, not just in whether you can get your money back.
And I suppose we're not used to thinking of banks and building societies and companies having a bit of a human empathy, you know, but it's about being socially responsible, I suppose.
It is, absolutely, that's right. And so it's right to consider an individual's ability to pay over the long term, and that's what we as mortgage advisors do, and that's what the lenders do as well.
There was a lot of hoo-ha in the news a couple of weeks ago about interest-only mortgages and the fact that some people who are on this are going to come a cropper. So this is where, instead of repaying back some of the capital, you only repay the interest. So at the end of the mortgage loan, you've got a big bill to pay.
Exactly, yes. Right. If I borrow £100,000...
Come and work for you.
That's right, yes. If I borrow £100,000 and at 6% interest, for example, then the interest per year is £6,000.
Yep.
I pay the lender that money, but none of the money that I've actually borrowed off them back. That's interest only. The alternative is repayment, where the amount you borrow goes down every month and every year. And the Financial Conduct Authority, who are the regulators, they very, very remarkably use the phrase a time bomb. There is a real problem out there right now, because during the noughties, during the boom, lots of people borrowed money on interest only because they couldn't afford to go for the repayment route, because they believed house prices would just keep on going up and up and up. And there are some astonishing figures. 1 in 10 people have no repayment plan whatsoever for their interest only mortgage.
What do you think they're going to do? Do they just think it'll all come out in the wash?
There are various pieces of advice I can offer, and perhaps we'll come on to that. But half of people with interest only have a shortfall. between now and 2020, there are 600,000 people with loans maturing in the next 7 years.
Gosh.
An enormous proportion of those don't have any way of paying back that loan. So what does that means to the housing market? That people are going to have to sell their houses. So it's not actually good news for all of us. Because if there's a massive flood of properties on the marketplace for people with interest-only mortgages who can't afford to repay, that's going to adversely affect all of us. And there are steps that can be taken. If you want me to tell you about them, I will, Emma.
I suppose the old-fashioned way was the old endowment, wasn't it? That's what people used to do.
Yeah.
They used to pay off the interest and also pay into an endowment policy. But endowment became a bit of a dirty word, didn't it?
Yes, well, endowments also suffered from this low interest rate environment in which we now live. They assumed higher growth rates, and they didn't achieve those higher growth rates because the whole world became a low interest rate world. And so there are big shortfalls in the endowments, and people will have, if any of your listeners are endowment holders with mortgages, they will know about the red letter. And a red letter day, sadly, with an endowment is not a good thing, where the endowment firm writes to say you're going to be short. And I've seen people who are short by tens of thousands of pounds.
Gosh.
And some people, when they get a letter from their endowment firm, they just get bored at looking at the envelope and they just put it in a drawer. And so you do get people who get to the date they should be repaying their mortgage and they suddenly realise they're 10, 20, 50,000 pounds short.
So you said you had some advice for people in those kinds of situations that perhaps either can only afford interest only or for whatever reason haven't made the necessary provision. What can they do? Is it all doom and gloom?
Well, the first thing is psychological. Do not bury your head in the sand. Do not put that envelope in the drawer. For goodness sake, please open it, whether it's from your mortgage lender or from the people who are giving you your savings vehicle. Various things you can do. One of them is you can convert your mortgage to repayment if it's affordable. It will be more expensive, of course, but nonetheless, you should give consideration to that. Seek advice from your lender or from a mortgage advisor. Is it possible? Can I afford to convert to repayment?
Mm-hmm.
If there's an endowment in it and they're saying you will be £30,000 short in your mortgage at retirement, then look at converting that £30,000 shortfall to repayment. So the endowment gives its money, and then £30,000 shortfall you're repaying.
So it wouldn't be as much as repayment.
Exactly, yes.
But you're still paying the endowment as well, though, aren't
Indeed,
you?
Indeed, yeah. Sometimes it's applicable to actually surrender the endowment, take what money's in the endowment, pay that off your mortgage, and then reschedule what's left for repayment.
Well, there are options.
You've got savings plans, ISAs. People sometimes use their pension lump sums. You could downsize your house. You could overpay. And there are some people who are getting to retirement with a big shortfall, do not want to move house. And then there is the E word. There is equity release as a last resort. So there are various things you can do, but the one thing you must do is not bury your head in the sand.
Let's talk about people coming to retirement, because I'm hearing anecdotally that many people are reaching retirement age, whatever that might be these days, because obviously there's no fixed retirement age as such, but they still have several years left on their mortgage. I didn't think lenders would lend to you if they thought you were still going to be paying a mortgage in retirement.
Well, it comes back to this time bomb, really, where the decisions that were made, which are affecting people now, were made during the noughties when the lenders were much more cavalier and much more, well, we can get the house back if needs be. So those decisions about going into retirement with your mortgage were made when they were more relaxed about it. Now they wouldn't let it happen. Most lenders won't let a mortgage go past age 70. There are some that will get to 75, one or two to 80 or 85.
Okay.
But most lenders now won't let you go deeply into retirement with a mortgage. And even then, if you can go a little bit into retirement, it's with very firm proof that you'll be able to afford to pay that mortgage.
Okay, we're talking mortgages and property with Dave Penny for Money May. So if you have a question, get in touch. 0845 303 1566 is my number. Dave's with me for the next 10 minutes. You can also text 81333. Start your message with the word Somerset. Up next, we'll talk to Dave about how regularly you should review your mortgage. And if you do that, does it just end up costing you lots of money? And where you can go for advice. Until midday. Thanks for all your dandelion suggestions with my dandelion dilemma this morning. I'll read a few more of those out after 11:30. What should I do about the fact I am infested with dandelions? Literally, I'm on the cusp now of thinking of embracing them after what our dandelion expert said about the bees. Keep your suggestions coming in. 81333 to text me. Start your message with the word Somerset. We're in the middle of money. Fannie Mae with our resident money man, Dave Penny. This week's topic is mortgages. I've had a text in, just popped in, Dave, from Tom, who's in Street. He says, hello, I'm a first-time buyer with inheritance for a deposit. My wife and I got a mortgage through one of the high street building societies, and they're paying our stamp duty. It works great for us. We're very lucky. So Tom obviously appreciates there, didn't have to worry about a deposit because he had some inheritance. This whole business of fees around mortgages, stamp duty is obviously not a fee, it's a government tax, isn't it? But when you go to look at a mortgage, the deal might look great. 10 years fixed rate, as you mentioned earlier this morning, or like I did, 5 years fixed rate. Then they go, well, yes, but there's a product fee, there's a valuation fee, there's solicitor's fees, there's a CHAPS fee. I've never understood the CHAPS fee. Apparently it's so a chap can electronically transfer your money from one account to another. I think that's what it, I don't think it stands for that. And there's this whole host of fees that you think you've got yourself sorted and then you have to pay all these extras, Dave.
Yeah, that's true. And if you look at the rates I've mentioned to you, for example, the 1.74% two-year fixed rate.
Cheapest chips.
Yes, and I haven't got it written down here, but from memory, the just the arrangement fee was over £2,000. And if you have a small mortgage, a £50,000 mortgage, for example, then that's a big addition to the costs and it makes the percentage figure much higher. If you've got a £500,000 mortgage, well, maybe it's that makes it, you know, more attractive. So you must be careful about fees. And that particularly is relevant, I think, when people are coming to the end of a product.
Right.
So you've got your 2 year or your 5 year fixed.
Yep.
You're not moving house, you're staying as you are.
Yep.
But your product is ending, you're going on the standard variable rate and you need to shop around. You have to bear in mind that mortgage advisors, their job is to sell you a mortgage. And there's no harm in that. That's their job.
Well, you do some of that.
Exactly, like selling a car. But one thing I would always recommend to your listeners who are coming off a product is to always talk to your current lender about what deals they have. Because if you move your mortgage to a new lender, you will pay, as you rightly say, conveyancing, legal fees, you'll pay valuation fees, arrangement fees, the advisor's fee, all kinds of fees, which can be in the thousands.
And you have to work out whether it's worth it.
Yeah, so the first thing to do is ask your current lender, what do you have available to me right now? Because you'll avoid all of those fees usually. There might be an arrangement fee, but nothing else.
How often should you review your mortgage? If you're on a product like a fixed rate, do they still do trackers?
Still do trackers, yes.
Trackers,
discounts.
More discounts, all those. If you're on a product, then obviously the best time to review is when it comes to an end.
Yeah.
But if you are on a variable rate, and that's not a bad thing at the moment because rates are not ridiculous, should you make a point of reviewing your mortgage every so often?
If you're on a five-year product and everything remains the same in your life...
You're not moving.
You know, and the world is pretty similar. You know, rates haven't dramatically changed either way.
Yeah.
Then I would suggest that you put in your diary for 3 or 6 months before the product ends to start to open your mind to the shopping around. Lots of people, as you rightly say, Emma, are on the standard variable rate because they've come off their fixed rate. And actually, the standard variable rate's so low that it's quite beneficial for them to stay on that.
Mm.
Or they're trapped. They're on interest only, or they're a self-employed person and no other lender will touch them anyway, so they have to stay with the current lender. In that case, if you're on the standard variable, I would, if a big piece of news comes out saying rates are about to shoot through the roof...
phone your advisor.
Phone your advisor or phone your bank, or just make a diary note for every 3 or 6 months. For half an hour a week, read the financial press.
One quick question on self-employment, because I know lots of self-employed people listen to this programme. Is it harder to get a mortgage when you're self-employed?
Simple answer, yes, it is. If you're a well-established self-employed person with a steady income, with certified accounts from a certified accountant for more than 3 years, and you have all of those lovely happenings in your life, then you're fine. But in my experience, most self-employed people, firstly, income tends to have gone down in recent years because we're in a recession.
Yeah.
Lots of them don't have 3 years of certified books, and the lenders want it. They want at least two.
Mm.
And so your options, the lenders that will be interested in you, are really radically cut if you're self-employed or you're setting up a new business, that kind of thing. It's just, I'm afraid to say, a factor of the current life.
And equity release, we touched on it earlier. It's quite a big subject, but for lots of our listeners who may be in retirement, nearing retirement, and they might be wanting to help out younger members of the family who are trying to get a foot on the ladder and whatever. Mm. Equity release, as an overview, is that something worth considering?
it is something worth considering when you've looked at all the alternatives. If it's for your own benefit, if you're in a house thinking I need some money for home improvements or for whatever, or for helping your children get on the property ladder, which is quite common, actually, increasingly common, then if you've considered all other options, then yes, it's fine. In the old days, that they were expensive in terms of fees and also in terms of their rates. But right now, there are equity release rates which are fixed at 5.75% for life, guaranteed for life, 5.75%. You can, in fact, pay that interest if you want to, so your loan won't increase. And even if it does at 5.75%, you're guaranteed for there never to be negative equity or something horrible like that. So the products nowadays are much more civilised and much more beneficial to borrowers than they were back in the 90s when they got themselves a bad name.
And are they regulated in the same way as mortgages and financial advisors?
They're more regulated. In order to be an equity release advisor, which I am, for example, you have to pass additional exams and have additional scrutiny from the regulator. What's more, you have to involve an independent solicitor to ensure the advice being given is in the client's best interests.
So we've talked a lot about mortgages today and low interest rates. Next week we're going to talk about savings. So in this case, low interest rates will not be good news. Savings and investments next week. What should we do? Should we just as well spend it? Because it ain't making any money where it is. Dave will be back next Tuesday for our next instalment of Money Made. Dave, thank you very much.
You're welcome.